Metro Access Subcommittee, November 21st, 2016.
You want to open up the meeting? Come on.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'm going to start the Metro Access Subcommittee meeting today. Would everyone sound their telephones? I'm going to start the introduction to my lab while I'm giving some first vice chair, Susan Garland.
Phil, pardon me, Mr. President, Dr. Vanity, Dr. Vanity, not the chief, not the chief.
Now, you can go to Washington, D.C.
Cheryl O'Connor, Metro Access.
John Ray, MD Transportation.
Nicole Bridgeway, MD Transportation. Allison Anderson, Metro Access.
Leroy Hayford, Metro Access.
Carl Baker, Metro Access.
Janice Carpenter, Metro Access.
Stephanie Thorne, Metro Access.
Alcott McKinnon, Metro Access.
Irwin Fry, Metro Access.
Nicole Mack, Metro Access.
Charles Robinson, Metro Access.
David Schaefer, ADA Policy and Planning.
Carol Tyson, Advocate.
Heidi Case, Advocate.
Georgette Reeves Sela, Clients.
Jen Weber, MTM.
Forrest Freeland, MTM.
Eric Leader, MTM.
Ambrose Thorne.
Jack Hempstead, First Transit. Conrad Marshall, Transdev.
Bob Walsh, Metro Access Customer.
Albert Freeman, Susan Brown.
After you speak on the mic, would you please cut your mic off because we're getting feedback. Thank you. Now we're going to review the agenda and the... Now we're going to review the agenda and the minutes of the prior meeting.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
We had a request from staff to flip two items on the agenda for time purposes, so we'd like to reverse the Metro Access route trip insertion process and move that back and move the OCC customer service and the update.
Okay. Any other changes? Any objections?
I move that we accept the agenda as changed.
Second.
Call the vote.
All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Those that opposed? Any discussion? Now,
Madam Chair, Compliments to staff in the minutes are in much larger font than easier to read this one. That's really nice. But somehow they managed to leave out the section where we discussed the trip and the new Metro Access ID card being trackable or not trackable. Ms. Bellevue had asked a question during the meeting, and there was a rather extensive discussion about tracking the trip insertion, and somehow it...
I thought that was during the main AEC meeting, not during the subcommittee meeting.
This is subcommittee minutes. Ah, okay.
Yeah.
So that's the meetings which were then to... Thank you.
Any other changes?
Madam Chair, I'd like to make both the minutes as presented.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Any discussion? It's been passed and accepted. Next, we'll have the customer service and outreach reports and things. Thank you, Ms. Rush. Try to back up off the mic. At this time, we'll have Jennifer Weber with MTM give the report on the public comment from last session.
Hi. At the last AAC full committee, there were 4 public comments, and at the subcommittee, there were also 4 public comments. All issues have been reviewed, and the customers have been contacted with the findings.
All right, thank you. Since our last subcommittee meeting, there have been actually 2 outreach events that have taken place at the beginning of November. Myself, along with Mr. David Schaefer, attended the National Harbor Chapter of the National Federation of Blind, their Resource Day event. I think this is their 7th annual. It was very well attended. We had a table there, and we spoke with many customers and attendees regarding not only Metro Access, but Metro Bus, Metro Rail, and the accessibility features of all our modes of transportation. So, once again, we were very honored to be in attendance and plan on being there next year. This evening, 2 of our colleagues, Mr. Mark Nash, who's a field team manager for Metro Access, as well as Felice Adloff, one of our service monitors, is in attendance to a meeting actually this evening within Prince George's County. It's, I believe, the Rolling Meadows community meeting, and they are there to, again, talk about Metro Bus, Metro Rail, Metro Access, and answer any questions from the community regarding our services. So that concludes our outreach since last meeting. Thank you.
Ms. Anderson, if I might make a suggestion, I was at National Harbor this weekend for a meeting, and they had a very nice wayfinding app for the convention center. And it might be useful to see if we can contact MPM Grant and also the convention center to have that app extended to wayfinding to NH1 and NH2 bus. And also to the bus stop that's going to be in front of MGM Grand. Since they already have the basic app, it's just putting in 2 more locations. And so possibly contacting them would be a useful thing.
Okay.
Absolutely,
we
can do that.
Thank you.
The next item will be the OCC Customer Service Annual Update.
Wait a minute.
Just a second. I just wanted to preface before we have Mr. Murray talk about customer service, that actually, what the presentation that we have this evening is going to be the first of five presentations that we will have with our service providers for the Metro Access contract. So this evening is kind of very evening to present, but we will have Diamond, First Transit, and MTM also give a presentation. I think that's on their plan. So that will be coming up as we move through 2017. So with that, let's present Mr. John Gray with any presentation.
Well, good evening again. Thank you very much for having us here. We're pleased to be able to return again this year and give you an update on our customer service program and the progress we've been making. We also wish tonight to talk to you about trip insertions and trip movement. I know I speak on behalf of all my colleagues at MP Transportation and are very proud of the fact that we've been able to come here for the last 10 years and learn a lot from the AEC members. When Ms. Bridgeway Reed and I spoke last year, we talked about the results that we had achieved up until that point last year in the Operations Control Center. Last year, we discussed several items. Our intent tonight is to break down our presentation into those same items again so you can provide you with an update.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you again for having us tonight. Again, my name is Nicole Ridgeway Reed, and I am the acting director of the Operations Control Center. When we were here last year, we heard a lot of information, and with that, we took it back to our offices and did all that we can to improve customer service. So just to kind of give you a brief overview of what we've done thus far. We talked about behavior, modeling customer service excellence behavior from the top down, meaning that senior management, including myself, Mr. Gray, and Paul Alesho, who is our acting assistant project manager, we are constantly on the floor working with our managers, our supervisors, and agents, leading by example. We are working with them and coaching them on how to be better at their positions, and most importantly, interact in a customer-focused way with both our internal customers, those who ride Metro Access, our customers and our passengers, and also our drivers, our internal customers. So we heard you on that. We've had some success. I'll just give you one example. We had a supervisor that unfortunately was not being very customer-focused with handling a call from a customer. And one of our managers immediately intervened and took control of that call, spoke with the customer, apologized for the supervisor's behavior, and then followed up with that supervisor on the spot with proper coaching and counseling to make them better at their positions. So I just want you to know that we are modeling and walking the walk when we talk. Next, we talked about last year making some innovative changes to our customer service training. And so we had Leslie Gorham here with us, who was our corporate director of training last year. And again, we heard what you were telling us, and we came up with our customer service excellence training, which is very specific to our industry and very specific to our customer base. We use a lot of customer service examples, calls that come through, both positive and negative, and use that within our customer training. And it's all about attitude. Having the right attitude is very important to begin with. And so we work with the attitudes of our employees. We identify customer needs, not just with, again, our external customers, but also our internal customers, meaning our drivers. We talk about what it means to effectively communicate, listening without interrupting, using a proper tone of voice to show empathy and understanding, because we do know that our customers want to be understood and heard, and we get that. Also, to making sure that with every service contact, we give great customer service. And that's an opportunity. Every time we interact with a customer, that's a customer contact. And I'm not sure that our employees really understood what that meant. But we also work on resolving conflict. Sometimes we might have to, working within policy, we may have to deliver news to a customer that they may not want to hear, but it's how we deliver it that's important. You know, being respectful, treating that other person on the line with dignity. So we've been working on that as well. And of course, ultimately, we are coming up with ways and ideas on not just meeting customer expectations, but exceeding them. So we've been working very hard on that. Again, a lot of role playing takes place so that, you know, just with muscle memory, it becomes automatic. The more you do something, it becomes automatic. So we're working really diligently with our employees on that. With regards to interactions and relationships between our dispatchers and our drivers, again, we drive home the idea that our drivers are our customers. They're very important to us. Without them, our service wouldn't be possible. So we work very diligently. We have a program whereby new drivers come into the Operations Control Center. They get to see firsthand what we do in the Operations Control Center. They talk with our dispatch agents, and they share stories. They share concerns. They share challenges to kind of, you know, bridge that divide. So we've been working all year doing that. I see some progress in that area as well. We're also doing a lot of live monitoring on the floor. So we have a quality assurance team that does that, but also too, we're training our supervisors how to listen in on conversations that our agents have, not just with our customers on the phone who are calling in asking where's my ride, but also too, the radio communication with the drivers, because that's very important. And I know personally, if I've heard an agent who might have become frustrated, you know, I'm right there, you know, kind of interceding, saying, you know what, take a break, let me handle it. And, you know, just making sure that we're doing the right thing by all of our customers. But again, it's a continuous effort that we're trying to do here with the live monitoring. We've also worked on creating what we call customer service blitzes, customer service days, where we really focus on customer service excellence, best practices. We try to make it fun and engaging for our employees with regards to, you know, listening in who has the best call, you know, making sure that we commend folks on the spot and we make it public and make it a big deal so that it encourages other agents to do the same. And we've had a lot of fun with that. You know, we bring in food and everything, but it's all about the customer service experience that we're trying to focus on here. And with that, we have seen immediate following a customer service blitz, we'll get inundated with accommodations, which is great. We love accommodations. So we definitely are going to be doing more of those as well. With regards to accommodations, again, we love it when our customers call in and say we're doing a great job. And so we commend our employees by giving them a nice certificate. We give them a gift card. Sometimes if we have multiple winners in a time period, we'll have them spin the wheel and win a bigger prize. In fact, we just gave away a 55-inch base screen television, which got everyone excited about customer service. So it was a great experience for everyone. For the new year, we're actually going to be looking at ways that we can revamp our accommodation program so that it's more enhanced for our employees. And then, of course, last but not least, the constant coaching that takes place every day is really important. Again, senior management is leading by example, but we really emphasize with our management team, including our supervisors, that you have to lead by example. It's not okay if, you know, we're not engaged in being customer focused and doing the right thing for our customers. So we are doing team meetings on a daily basis. We are also having training as well to kind of reinforce that. So again, we thank you very much for all your feedback. We are striving diligently to improve customer service. We're not where we want to be, but we are working very diligently to get where we need to be. And thank you again for having us.
Thank you very much for that conversation. I will take questions. Oh, this is Paul Summerford, Metro Access Subcommittee Chairperson from PG County Capitol Heights. For the customers out there who probably want to have comments as it relates to this, raise your hand and staff will bring the customer service, a comment card, and then I will incorporate that into this topic and conversation. But starting with committee members, we got Tappan, followed by who else? Anyone wants to comment on this presentation? Ms. Rush. Who else from AAC? Anyone else? Ed? Okay. All right, so we're going to go in the order of Tappan, Rush, and Ed, and put on the timer, please. I see you for 3 minutes. Thank you. Starting with Tappan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A quick question. I think you're aware of handling your supervisors and other agents. Wonderful, I think. Constant coaching and teaching and all those things are great. And also, Warrior, those who are doing a very good job. That's also great. But do you ever fire anybody? Is not working out? How are they? Unfortunately, you can coach people, and sometimes a person doesn't have the ability. And we've had to let people go that don't have that ability to provide good customer service. We don't want to. That is never our goal. That's not our intention. But sometimes people don't get it. So we'd rather concentrate our efforts on employees that do get it and are going out of the way to try to get good customer service.
Just to follow up, a quick follow up. What is the turnover rate, say, a year when you lose?
For our offices, about 35%.
Thank you. Ms. Rush, go ahead.
I run very often, and I personally have noticed a change on how dispatchers talk to my drivers. And that's one thing. I'm glad it's happening.
I am very pleased to hear that. We've been working with that. We know we're not there yet, but we also heard a change in a lot of the drivers too. With simple greetings and the good mornings and how are you, and showing empathy with our drivers as well throughout the course of the day.
Thank you. Ed?
Mine is the microphone, but it's getting the feedback. I just wanted to say basically the same thing that Ms. Rush said, that I've visibly noticed over the last year or so that things have become much more efficient and really operating pretty well.
Thank you.
Thank you. Oh. Any other AAC members?
Just a personal request. MV handles the paratransit system in Gainesville, Florida. Can you pass that training on to the folks down here?
We would love to. I don't think the company is going to give you a break for a month to go down to Gainesville or Mr. Juggies.
You can stay with us.
One more thing, the wait time you need to speak to a supervisor, is the OCC part of where you are by?
Yes.
Well, that area needs to, wait a long time to get a supervisor to discuss your problem, or the driver has to wait a long time to get someone to respond, and sometimes it could be an emergency or something, but I've been together right now 15 minutes, 20 minutes, and one day I had the people call Ms. Anderson, because we couldn't, for 20 minutes, we couldn't get anybody.
We understand that. We apologize for any inconvenience that provides you personally. That is something that we are working on and monitoring on a weekly basis with regards to our call answering times for supervisors as well as for SMRI. So we do need some improvement with that. We've been inundated with calls recently. That's no excuse, but we are working diligently to make sure that everybody is in the queue, ready and willing to answer phone calls. So hopefully we'll be seeing some improvement on that.
One suggestion. I ride Star a lot, and Diamond Transportation has an app for where I ride that works really well. When you're assigned a ride, you get a text message with the number of buses that come and get you. And then if you want to know where they are, you text back to them with the question where. And then they text back and they tell you 10 minutes, 15 minutes, 20 minutes, or go away. But if Diamond has it, and you're one of our contractors, they may be able to share that with the call center.
Actually, to expound a little bit on that, that's the whole project that we're working on with the map overlay, the traffic overlay, to try to get to that point. Obviously, I think our service is much more, you know, a higher volume, but yes, to your point, that's where we want to be. To be able to have that level of communication with our customers.
But even if you can take a surgical load out of the call center by having all the Diamond trips work with the app, that would be more of your time for your customers to do some
overload. Dr. Dennis?
What I'd say is basically a little bit about the institution. I had noticed that when I called, especially if I had left a minute, no show that for 5 minutes a few times maybe. But when I called and speak to the person there willing to reschedule the trip, usually they don't have to go through the supervisor.
They, you know, they're very curious. They're always very curious. So I have noticed that.
I'm glad to hear
that everyone's being courteous. Thank you. Questions, I guess, from... Oh, sorry. I guess, Ms. Bellamy, did you have any comments about this? Should I go to audience members, getting their feedback?
No, what are we...
We're talking about... OCC customer service, they just kind of gave an annual update about that. How customers are treating.
Negative. I'm going to be quiet.
Okay. All right. I guess for the customers out there, were there any? Can someone bring Heidi a microphone? On time, please.
I often get calls when people complain and I pass things on to Allison, and she always does a great job following up. But I would have to say the number of late trips. We all know that those have two and three times what they were just recently. You know, the more late people are, the more calls you're going to get. I mean, that's just a fact, unfortunately. And due to that, my experience, and I don't use it personally, but in calling sometimes for people or hearing the stories, there's been a lot more upset and no-shows. And now each of those Allison has dealt with, but I can't say the same as what other people are saying with the improved, possibly they're nicer with what they negatively, you know, what they have to say. But definitely there's a greater upset that I'm hearing, and it has to do with the lateness factors in particular, and then calling several times, and often them saying, oh, they're just right there, and they'll be there in 5 minutes or 10 minutes, and then it's 20 more minutes, and they call back, and those kind of problems. So they're not specifically customer service, but it overlaps and creates an impact, I'm sure.
Thank you. Ms. Bellamy?
I think one of the things we need to remember, if this is a partnership between us and customer service, and we always want to complain, we never want to understand that there are so many people riding there. And the colder it gets, the more people will ride. And if we don't turn our attention to being a little quieter in the van, respect the drivers. We want them to respect us. But I remember not too long ago, I stopped riding, and I made the comment, I'm out of here. But I got to ride. So it upsets me when a passenger gets in there and that's with a driver. Because the driver can get upset and kill me too. So I think we need to learn how to be more tolerant. Metro Access is not going to be 90% on time. We might want it, but people don't come out. And I would rather a driver lock me down properly than to go out the window in a Metro Access van. I would rather a driver take his time and do what he's been taught than to be upset because somebody gets in there and they want to take this ride as if it's a personal limousine service. We got to be more tolerant. And the more people that are riding, drivers don't want to drive now because they don't like what they're getting paid. And we don't want to pay no more money. So we need to come to a happy medium with this thing and not always find fault with Metro Access, but look at the good he does because he sure my lifeline, even though I can drive. But it's cold now and I have to ride. So let's be more tolerant to Metro Access and stop looking for them to jump through hoops. They're going to be late sometime, more than what we want. We're late. The train is late, and the buses are late. So let's not always complain about Metro Access.
Mr. Chair,
I think you did that.
Yeah, this is for Heidi. Okay. Heidi's anecdotal comments are really nice, but let me give you some of the numbers that confirm what she said. The on-time performance goal is greater than 92% from September of 2015 and 2016, and went from 93.9% down to 83% on-time performance. That's a 10% reduction in on-time performance. For the fiscal year to date, 2015 and 2016, it's gone from 94.5 down to 87.7, so there's been almost a 7% reduction in on-time performance. Excessive late trips, the goal is 0.75%. Those are more than 20 minutes beyond the pickup window. And for September, that was up to 4.5%. So those are real numbers. And Metro Access knows about it. It's not just anecdotal. I mean, it's real, and something needs to happen to make it better.
All right.
Mr. Chair?
Okay.
May I respond to that?
Sure.
Some of the other numbers, though they're not being shown, are the fact that on a weekly basis we're approaching 50,000 trips, which is record high ridership that we haven't seen in 6 years. You know, one of the things that I thank Ms. Bellamy for what she said, because while you'll never hear me come up and say that we can't meet our goals, because we must meet our goals, there are times that we do fall short of those goals. And it's not necessarily because all of us forgot how to provide paratransit, or that the commitment's been throttled back, or that Metro took its money back out of the budget, or the contractors don't care anymore. That's not what it is. Sometimes we're late, and sometimes we have problems with the service, because unlike bus service and train service, every day is like a box of chocolates for us. We do not know how many people are going to ask for a Metro Access trip until the day before. And when you think about it, we have over 40,000 registered customers in the system now. It's quite a few people. Most of the time, the customers use the service a certain number of times a week or a month, and that, you know, most of the time we can predict the ridership. To some degree, we've done a good job of predicting it for budgetary purposes. But when the weather is unseasonably warm, you know, I think everybody would agree that, you know, we're all talking about the cold now because it kind of suddenly came upon us recently. But it's actually been fairly warm for us, September, October, November, so very recently. And people have been out using the service more than they normally do. So we come to work, and we're planning the service for the next day, and suddenly we're overwhelmed with people saying, nice weather, let's travel. We're the victims of our own success sometimes. Sometimes people, because they are doing exactly what Metro Access was meant to do, it lets people with disabilities go wherever they want. They don't have to say why, they don't have to prove it's a doctor's appointment, it's a civil right, they can use it to go wherever they please, as much as they please, and Metro never says no. But if we show up and over a 2, 3, 4 week period, suddenly more people are riding, we can't wave a wand and suddenly have 10 or 15 extra vans. And to Ms. Rush's point, she's made this a couple of times, we also can't break, so, you know, wave a wand and produce 10 or 15 or 20 or 30 or 50 more drivers either. We can't move that fast. No one can. So, you know, yes, recently, you know, Phil mentioned that the number went down 83%. Well, it wasn't like that all year long. This started this summer. And, you know, prior to that, you know, when I saw a news article that said, you know, the service is the worst it's been in the last 3 years. Absolutely correct. Because 3 years ago, 2 years ago, and 1 year ago, it was running pretty well. And then all of a sudden, boom, lots of people come and they want to ride. So it's something that normally we don't talk about much, because our customers shouldn't have to care about that. They should just be able to come and reserve a trip and get a timely ride whenever they approach us. But this committee does have some of the inside information. And I just think it's important to say that if you ever notice that there's a change in our performance, the only thing I ask is that you do give us an opportunity to come and tell you if there is an explanation. And, you know, the most important thing I'm sure that you all want to know as customers is, well, what are you doing about it? And so the good news is that we have ordered another batch of 207 Metro Access vans, most of which are going to replace the old ones, but some of them are going to allow us to carry more people. And we're working with all of our contractors on ways to retain drivers, to attract drivers to come to the job. And yes, Ms. Rush, that does include treatment nicer.
Well, does it include benefits so they will stop changing, looking for jobs, and you know, there's 10 people, 20 people from each company, they're calling in, they're not coming to work, and so you have to then have inserts, because 20 drivers may call in and Monday and say, we're not coming to work, and so you've already scheduled the rides for those people. Then you have to insert them onto somebody else's schedule, which makes it tight, and that's called an insert, and then start everybody's late. But if we really try to keep drivers,
we want minimum driver service, and we're paying Volkswagen wages.
There's some truth to it, but I'm just, in the sense that we do expect very high quality from the service, but I'll answer this way. The contractors are being very open-minded about the things that they can do to improve city conditions for drivers. I'm not empowered to speak for them, but I can tell you...
I'm talking to them.
I know you are. I'm doing the same thing, Ms. Rush. You know, they're in the room, they know, but you know, that's for them to say. But I will tell you that they are aware of the fact that there are other employers out there that are competing for these same individuals. But you know, some of what you're talking about, and this is my last comment, because I see Phil's got his hand on the buzzer, but I'm just going to add, but you know, I mean, Phil, you gotta cut me slack once in a while.
I just wanted to give you a suggestion.
Okay.
We can all agree that there's been a problem with the service, and one major thing that happened with the service, you're focusing on increased ridership, which isn't that much according to the numbers. We changed the entire format of how the system was run 2 years ago within the contract, using three vendors instead of one vendor. And I think there has to be some investigation as to whether it's a systematic problem as well as a ridership problem. I'm not putting my finger at any one thing or another, but you know there was a lot of discussion about the new model that Mr. Sarles proposed. And a lot of people have thought there might be some real flaws in that model. And the model is now moving ahead, and the question is, are the flaws in service due to a model problem, or due to a passenger problem, or due to individual server problems? And that's beyond what I can do, but you are collecting all the data. And so I think it's really important that we look at that data, and when the next contract comes out, that there's analysis done as to how to deal with it. And I know you're working with great things like EasyCab and Dealer Ride to reduce the ridership, but it may be something beyond that.
Let me just add this. Number one, what Denise described about being short drivers and the effect that that has, that can happen at any time. In our business, the normal practice is to budget for absenteeism because people are going to be sick, people are going to have child care issues, people are not going to be able to come to work every day. Employers in this business have to budget for this sort of thing. Sometimes the absenteeism is higher than what is standard and what people anticipate, and they have to adjust for this. So that's one thing. You know, another piece of it is as far as why people are absent. You know, I mean, I don't like to get into labor issues because we don't manage those for the contractors, but I will point out that most employers have a no-fault absenteeism policy where, you know, there's not a lot of judgment about why you're out. You're just given a certain number of outs that you can have. So, you know, to speculate about why people are out, a lot of people are out today, so that must mean that they hate Metro Access and they don't want us to be on time, or they're unhappy about their conditions. I mean, you know, that's speculative. I think that the fact is that every one of those individuals has an allotment of time off that they're allowed to use, you know, as they need to. And the point is, it's not really, you know, productive for us to try to analyze the drivers. It's the manager's job to determine that there are enough people to be able to handle the routes that are given out. And as far as the business model is concerned, you know, now that hits a little close to home because I'm the one who proposed it. And, you know, it was not Mr. Sarles, I was the one who proposed it. I'm the one who created it. And the model was based on a few things that are very important. We separated the call center operation from the routes that are operated by the service delivery providers. Almost immediately upon implementing the new model, we saw a jump in productivity on the service, which is one of the things that allows our board to be able to agree with you when you ask not to raise the fares. There does need to be financial efficiency here. Another one is quality assurance. We have MTM, they're able to look at the way the service is provided, and I have a separate company that's able to give us information on, and the data that we so desperately need to make good decisions comes from an impartial third party that looks at the way that the service operates. And the third part of this is that by having three different contractors with three different approaches to service, and I can tell you again that even though we've had issues recently with the performance, the incorporation of ideas from the managers of the three companies has brought about innovation and improvements to customer service that we did not have before. It has not been a 3-year slog of bad performance. And so, you know, when you say you looked at the data and you didn't think the ridership is that much higher, looking at the annualized ridership from 1 year to the other is not the same as looking at what the average weekday ridership is at different times during the year, because for every September, October, November that has high ridership because of good weather, there will be January and February where the weather is snowy and we have unusual low ridership then. And by the time you get to the end of the year, the numbers don't look that different from each other. We have to take into consideration how many rides are phoned in on a given day when we're operating. And that is what makes the difference between that, the number of operators and vehicles we have. That's what determines the ability of us to provide good service. But we've had very strong statistics in this service for quite some time, and it's been witnessed and attested to by not only the riders and our surveys, but also by our regulators. So, you know, you'll forgive me for being a commercial today about Metro Access, but I'm very proud of the service. And I think, you know, when it does slip, I take responsibility for it. But one thing that Metro does not do is we don't point fingers at anybody. It's one team. We all need to work together to make it work better. And I also like to compliment MB. I thought she did a fine job at her presentation today about customer service. You know, that's something that we can always work on. But we do have some recent problems because of the spike in ridership. And there are other conditions that are taking effect here recently. You know, there are changes in the job market too. And, you know, I'm going to make Carol Tyson happy in a minute when I say that there's a certain company or set of companies out there that have taken business away from taxi cabs as well as from public transit. So, you know, as people are finding other jobs to take, you know, I mean, the market is changing. I mean, there was a time before, you know, we had all these different options out there that in some cases it was easier to find drivers. I've spoken with the corporate executives from the companies that manage Metro Access, and I asked them, are you having a driver recruitment challenge here only in DC, or is this a problem in other places? And they named at least 10 other major markets around the country that are having the same problem because the same changing circumstances are happening all over the country. So I think, you know, again, it's very important that you can take, I feel like I'm in the election, and somebody shows part of the data and goes, oh my gosh, you know, and it's like, well, but yet there's more data. And, you know, unless you can't make a fair determination about Metro Access unless you have all the data and you see the entire story. So I would be remiss to come to these meetings and not tell you our side and provide our data, you know, in addition to what others are sharing.
I would take this example to make a motion to Mr. Hafer, who does a great job of giving us this data every month, to add the daily data to the weekly and monthly data if we need those numbers. You know, just every month when you look at the minutes, I do make the comment is what has happened to the ridership, and the light we are that it is less than the predicted 7% increase, et cetera, et cetera. So if there is a number that would be more effective for us to understand, then let's add it and put it in.
Are you talking about the 7% increase that was anticipated in the budget?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I'm just going to make one last comment about that, that there are times when we make the budget.
Oh, I understand.
That the idea is to really tighten the belt, and there's some scenarios that I see in the budget that I really hope will never materialize, but that's just, you know, a side comment. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right, I'm going to let Mr. Hafer answer, and we must move on to the next big topic because it's trip insertion, and that's going to take a bit of time, and then I do need to get the customer comment period. I know there's new business, so we want to get everyone out by 6, so let's be mindful about that. Mr. Hayford?
Very quickly, Dr. Posner did point out the fiscal year gay ridership for 2016. We did look at that. That's missing for the fiscal year 2016. It's missing an entire month of ridership. I think it's July, but I can definitely attest to you we're 5% over for the quarter to date, that I can attest to you. So it is missing July. It's a little bit over 600,000.
That explains the 23% decrease in ridership.
He really does read our data.
Yes, I do.
Thank you.
We have to have
that's to do.
And that's why we have to have, like I said, all of them.
All right.
Tell the story.
Thank you. Now we're going to talk about trip insertion process.
Well, thank you. We realize that when we talk about trip insertion, there's a lot of apprehension and anxiety with both our customers and with our drivers. We're often asked if scheduling is good. Why do we ever need to reschedule a trip? We also do have some customers who will call in and believe that the only trips that are moved in the entire day are only their trips. We also have some drivers that have this myth in their minds that the only trips that we give are trips on their manifest and no one else's. This is not the case. Our goal is not to hurt any customer or hurt any driver, but is to help improve the service. We have a very complicated, dynamic, and robust system that we deal with. And we have many factors throughout the day that we have to deal with that cause trips to be moved. So today I'd like to discuss some of these. And as Christian mentioned, bus and rail. And I'm going to talk about the differences. I'm also going to talk about why trips are moved. And then how trips are moved. And our goal with trip movement. So bus and rail. Bus and rail is vastly different. Once the schedule is put forward for bus and rail, it's pretty much the same route every day. The time points for where the driver is supposed to be for those times of day. If a driver goes to the station, or if they go to a bus stop, and there's no passengers there, they wait there all the time and move on. If there's construction, that might be one delay, but aside from that, and a little bit of traffic, it's the same route every day. Consistency is the name of the game. The driver gets used to the route, they know where they're supposed to be, they know the patterns, they know what's going to happen. Metro Access is vastly different because on any given day, our service is different. From the subscriptions that we have to our ridership. As Christian mentioned, the weather might be nice tomorrow, we might get 1,000 more trips. We might have different things that go on in the city that we have to adjust for. So we have always have to be ready for that. So why are trips moved? Well, we're often asked this. And with a fluid system, it does change throughout the day. So let me talk about some of the factors. We might have passenger situations. A no-show or a cancel at the door. These will impact services. We're trying to get a hold of the customer to see if we can take them out. Behavioral situations. We might have incidents. There may be collisions. There may be traffic delays. Believe it or not, DC, we can have a little bit of traffic. Clearance on side streets, especially during inclement weather. We might also have door-to-door situations. We may have emergency situations, a passenger or operator illness. We might have a passenger that is ill after dialysis treatment. With adult daycare centers, we do have passenger altercations with passengers on board the vehicles. We mentioned capacity issues, high ridership counts, driver attendance. With drivers, the driver may accidentally miss a trip on their manifest, and we have to look at the passenger. We might have some other behavior issues as well. We might have a mechanical issue that was not manifest in the morning, but it has to be dealt with for safety reasons during the course of the day. From engines, to lights, to lifts, to doors, and safety equipment. We also have the human factor throughout the course of the day as well. Sometimes the passenger is ready on time, or sometimes, more times, needed to help the passenger. As this is a very fluid system, time is of the essence. We anticipate when we're scheduling the night before that our customers will be ready on time each day, that our routes will be leaving on time each day, and that traffic will be good.
But we realize that this is not always reality, and things will change constantly. So how are kids moved? And this is a very important question. Sometimes people think, well, it's very random, and it's only this trip, that trip, or it's like a shuffling in the deck, and that's not the case. We use the trapeze route management system. So think of an airline pilot. An airline pilot will use their instruments, and it will tell them the wind speed, it will tell them their altitude, it will tell them the direction, it will give them courses and changes throughout the course of their flight. Well, we use trapeze in the same manner. Trapeze will enable our managers and senior supervisors to look at the system as we're trying to move a trip, and will offer them the best solution at that time for trip movement. One of our goals with the trip movement is to make sure as we're looking at the trip and we're looking for solutions, does it impact the other customers on this route? Does it make sense to move this trip? And there are many times it does not make sense. So what is the goal of trip movement? Our overall goal is to help the customers. It is not to change the system. So we're constantly massaging the routes, trying to get manifests back on time, trying to get drivers back on time, trying to get our customers back up on time. We take out as many passengers and transport them to the destination on time as possible. Moving one passenger's trip must make sense. If it doesn't make sense, we try to avoid moving. There are many instances where a customer's trip may be on a route, and the customer might be 1 to 2 minutes late, and there's no place to move the trip that doesn't negatively impact 3 or 4 other customers. And we're constantly looking at that. It's kind of a ripple effect when you throw a pebble into a pond, and we're very cognizant of this. If you throw a pebble into a pond, it is going to cause a ripple. And the bigger the pebble, the bigger the ripple. What we're looking to do with trip movement is try to avoid causing a negative impact on the system. And that's where trapeze helps us, but we always have to use our minds and look at the advantage or look at the solutions that we have. The best scenario for us is when we don't have to move a single trip. The second best scenario is when we can move one trip off a manifest and get that manifest back in order and get the customer that was going to be late back on schedule. But we realize that there are a lot of challenges, especially right now, and this has been alluded to. The traffic in this area is one of the worst in the country, and we realize that, and we're trying to constantly go through the system and look for trips that may be impacted. On a good service day, we are looking through our routes and we're seeing any trip that might be projected to be late or projected to be in the last 5 minutes of the pickup window and looking to see if there's a better solution. We're also going through manifest to see if there's a better solution for the routing to try to keep customers within a tighter area for the pickup and drop off. I do have to mention that with the service issues that we've had recently, sometimes it is a challenge. And if there's a problem with the route, if we have something called an out-of-service event where the route does go down, we do have to find solutions for the passengers that are scheduled on that route. Sometimes we are already in that pickup window. And the solutions that we have mean that the customer is going to be late. But our goal is to make sure that the customer is picked up. When it's cold out, we are also looking at the weather, and we're trying to see, yes, we understand the customer may be late, but it's very important to make sure the customer is picked up as quickly as we possibly can. And we're trying to take all those factors into consideration. So who is trained to move trips? Well, only our managers and senior supervisors are permitted to move trips. We found that over the course of the years, that our team, through training, which includes training courses from trapeze and our own training program that we've gone over with Alana as well, can become quite skilled trip. We also realize that there are some people that do not have that skill, and we don't train them to do it, or we don't permit them to do it. Because our goal, once again, is to get the system back in order, help get our customers picked up, and be the most strategic as we possibly can. Part of our training includes what happens with the system when you interest our violation sets. Part of it is our AVL monitor, watching AVL. Part of it is our map usage. And it also is anticipating what's going to happen in traffic in most of the day as well. In regards to trip movement, as I mentioned, our goal is to try to get the system back in order as quickly as possible and try to get our customers picked up and taken to their appointments on time and as many as we possibly can. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, I will start taking AEC members. Bill, who else wants to speak to us? Darnese? Anyone else wants to speak to this? No? Ms. Rush? Okay. All right. Tappy? No? Yes? No? Okay. So we're going to go with Phil, then Darnese.
You know, I talked about this about a year ago with Mr. June, and Trapeze was in the process of developing overlapping groups to work with the GPS system in order to get the most efficient way to insert or remove lines, and I wonder how that's working.
Actually, I believe the process with the traffic overlay is getting close to completion, is that right? So yes, Oman is actively looking at that, trying to get that close to traffic. That will be a big benefit.
Thank you. Darnese?
Basically, I want to know the trip insertions. You say well, my question is, you know basically about how many subscription runs you have every day. So why does it seem that all of the subscription runners have a lot of insertions at the last minute? And the other thing I want to ask is, when you need to call in, you know, for where's my ride, if it's not on time or whatever, why do you get all of these delays and then tell they could use different times? I don't know if they actually talk to the driver now or not. They used to not talk to the drivers. But, and they tell you 10 to 15 minutes, 20 minutes. I think it would help if people actually knew the estimated time that the driver is really going to show up. Because people with disabilities, it's hard to stand out there in inclement weather. And if you are leaving from a place of business that you're not familiar with, it's not your workstation or whatever, you are at the mercy of the elements and the atmosphere or wherever you are. And it's very dangerous. If you become frustrated, I know I do. And that's why I know customer service is working, because I've been mighty discourteous on some of the calls that I've called recently. So I'd like to know a little bit more about that.
Well, thank you. I'll work a little bit backwards, and I appreciate the fact that our team is trying to be very courteous at all times.
Yeah.
with our Where's My Ride, when a customer calls in to find out where your ride is, what we're trying to do, which is a little bit different than in the past, we go to our AVL, our automated vehicle locator, and we're checking on the map to see where the vehicle is. If the vehicle is moving, we're not supposed to be contacting the driver unless we're saying, please contact us when you're safe to do so. So the estimate that we're giving is the estimate that we're given in Trapeze for when the vehicle should be there. So it's based off the mileage, it's based off of the distance, and it gives us a time factor as well. Sometimes that does get updated, as you obviously experience throughout the day as we get into traffic or the driver gets several stoplights, and it will get updated. But we are trying to provide the best information that we have at the time. In regards to subscription trips, there will be times that a route might not go out, or we might have a service issue with the route, or we might have some customers that are delayed on that route. Or even still, we might have some customers on another route that we have to find a solution for. And those manifests will get changed.
That's not our goal or our intent, but it does happen.
Thank you. Hold on, I got Ms. Rush, then you, Tech.
We as customers have to realize, and only from experience of riding for 18 years, and I know a lot of people don't want to hear this, but if the wayfarer ride says he's going to be there 10 minutes, and he takes 30 minutes, there is no way that Where's My Ride can say that he's going to be there in 10 minutes, because he could go one block, he's two blocks away, and he goes to the next block, and there's an accident. There's a fire. There's whatever. There is no way that they can tell us an exact time. There is no way. And then you go on the front circle. When they tell me 5 minutes, I already know that's 20 minutes. If they're on the front circle, because that circle is the circle from you know where. So there's no way. We're asking for stuff. Okay, when you get in a cab and you order a cab, and the cab comes, and you might be going 20 minutes, but it takes 40 minutes because there's something on the road. There's something happening. We're asking for the impossible, and we're expecting it. But it's no different than riding the metro. You get on the metro, and you think it's going to be faster. Then something happens on the track. You're going to be late. You could be on the bus and be late. We cannot expect the impossible as customers.
Thank you. Tab.
Yeah, good presentation, by the way. I appreciate that. You compared the bus and the rail and the tracks and differences. Bus has a fixed route and they know this one takes to go to CZ, Y, or anything like that. Say, oh, that's away from the loop station, red line. The Metrax is back, there's a couple of machines that change and they go a different route. But the passenger of Metrax is on the exact way he's going. If I'm going from home to the hospital, I know what I'm doing. And sometimes I have found myself telling the driver, hey, don't go that way. I know that very busy. Don't go this way. And this time of the day, if you go this way, don't follow the GPS if I told you. And you know something? I never miss my mind. So the driver do that at all? Ask the passenger in case something happens to him. The passenger goes the same place every time he takes. I've been to stations. I'm going to hospital or go to negotiation or whatever they're going, or office. They could be some suggestion. Have you used that system?
I believe that has been used in the past by some of the drivers, but this is also why we're looking forward to the traffic override to have drivers navigate when we do have the traffic delays.
No, said the chair. Paul did that when I was sharing a ride with him, and I got home 2 hours later. As long as Paul missed his turn. And so sometimes that works, sometimes it doesn't.
That is very true.
Okay, I have a customer comment here. Why is it that 15 to 20 miles north, but you can get, 15 to 20 miles north, but can't get 5 miles south of Branch Avenue in various areas? What's the situation with the new taxi cab and why? And how do you get service in an area that I know is a service area? There were three different questions here.
But the first question, like I said, you can go over to Montgomery County, 15, 20 miles north, but you can't even get to Brandywine, Maryland, which is ain't even 5 miles south of Branch Avenue. Why is that?
I can answer that. Without knowing the, I guess, the exact locations or whatnot. Metro Access does operate within a certain service area on certain days and times. So if you would like to give us specific locations that you're interested in going with, we can certainly look into that and let you know specifically and accurately if we do service that location and at what times and dates that we do service.
The answer to me is that they only serve within 3/4 a mile of fixed route services where bus and rail go. That's what the ADA tells them that they have to do. And so someplace like Brandywine, somewhere in Brandywine, although it's closer to you, if there is no bus and rail service within 3/4 of a mile of that location, they don't have to serve you. And that's an ADA issue, not really their issue. That's just the law.
The next question was, taxi cab, we can only use taxis for medical?
Yeah, and also I can, if he's not on the customer comment period, I can put him under that also. So he can ask those questions and get the responses from staff. Because we're trying to stick to what the topic is, where we're at right now. But thank you. Anyone else that has comments as it relates to this? As it relates to this topic?
Yes. So I think there are something about trapeze that misses some things, at least according to experientially. And one example I share is four women with a disability wanted to go to a club. And they were going from one woman's house to the club and back again. I think I shared this with Allison a while back. They sat in the same room and passed the phone around so they could be scheduled on the same route there. But getting picked up, those four women at the same time, leaving the same place, going to the same place, got three different trips coming back. And one of them was in D.C. She had to go into Maryland and back into D.C. when that same vehicle took two of her friends. And then, so originally we had suggested there being a human eye to look over the trips, but finding out recently the numbers of trips per day and not knowing, I'm not sure that that would be the solution, but it does seem like the computers aren't perfect. And I don't know if there's any kind of tweaking of trapeze that might help.
Oh, absolutely, and that's a very good point. When a customer is making a reservation, as soon as that reservation is made and we accept the trip with the customer, we save it. But it sounds like the problem is once we save the one trip, no one was looking for the other trips to match up to it. And it should have also been told to our scheduling department, or it should have been seen with our oversight as well.
Scheduled back and forth in that call, but somehow it didn't happen. Just the point only being the trapeze itself isn't perfect. It misses something that we might notice.
Mr. Chair, can
yes?
I just ask one question of our panelists? If a group of customers wanted to take a trip like that, would there be any value in making the reservation under the name of only 1 to 4 customers and reserving the others as companions rather than each one of them reserving the trip under their name?
Absolutely. Well, that would do is we'd all get on the same trip.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Along that line, sometimes there are meetings of the Blind EMS Society, the Parking Society, and there are going to be 20, 30 people going to the same location, and it might be nice to alert the schedulers that there are a lot of people going, because often we have five people that live within a block of each other show up in five different vans at the location, whereas if they knew, and we follow each other home. It's like a wagon train with one person on each vehicle. And so there might be a way that you could code it if we ask our particular event people to let them know that there's going to be a bunch going to this one location at this time on this day.
Actually, Dr. Posner, we've had a number of organizations do just that, have alerted us ahead of time that, hey, the conference or something is going to be taking place, there's going to be a lot of customers utilizing Metro Access, we get the location, and then we can begin to track those reservations so that we can have the scheduling team do just what you're talking about.
All right. Thank you. I would like to get the customer comment period and then maybe go back to any new business so I can get these customers. So we're going to start with that. Thank you for the wonderful topic and conversation. I'm sure we're going to visit it again in the future with more follow-up. The first person on the list is Heidi Case, 3 minutes.
Can I hold it? Thank you. It's related to Abilities Ride. Two things that, one is in relation to the questions answered about the RFP meeting. And one concerned me, I hate to see you leaving for this, Mr. Kent. Oh, you're just letting Mr. Blake. there was a question related to whether they would require training for wheelchair fastening by whoever received the grant. And you gave your stock sort of, I think of it as legal answer that, you know, hey, we want you to tell us what your business model is. And I can understand in many of the questions why you would say that, but particularly with wheelchair securement, I just don't think there's any space for that not to be a requirement because it is so specifically tied to safety, unlike some of the other questions. And it really sounds as if you're saying, you know, I would leave that to your business model. And that was a great concern to me. And the second thing is related to what I understand is happening in Maryland with fingerprinting being required for TNCs, which is supposed to take effect December 15th. I understand that Uber and Lyft have both appealed that, and they're awaiting hearing from a judge as to whether they're going to be forced to comply with that. And Uber has said if they are, they will pull out of Maryland, which might greatly impact whether or not they end up being able to provide service under that RFP. And I just wondered if you knew any more information related to that.
Good questions, both. First, on the question, you're correct. It's we're waiting for the proposal in terms of the wheelchair securement. Yes, we want the companies to tell us what they do for wheelchair securement training. We're not prescribing or requiring a specific training for wheelchair securement. It's what the companies do, because what we're doing again with the solicitation is leveraging existing or soon to be established general purpose trip businesses to offer an alternative to Metro Access customers. These will not disturb the program. It's not to create a new Metro Access service or a new Metro service. So if we're going to remain in that posture, we have to allow the businesses to tell us what they do, and therefore what would they do if you came on their vehicle today without a Abilities Ride program subsidizing your trip. What would they do? And we will then look at those things.
If they don't provide wheelchair service to anyone currently, then they don't have a training model. And so your answers didn't say it would be required. It's not asking, do they do it? It's, do you require it, was the question, period, as if not having any training was an option.
Okay. And what we're gonna do is look at each proposal, and we're gonna see what it is in reference to their training. And training is listed as a required response. If you don't respond to training, your proposal could be considered non-responsive. And on the second piece about the fingerprint, so yes, just a little bit of background. In 2015 Maryland General Assembly session, there was a bill that passed dealing with transportation network companies. In that bill, it did not require FBI fingerprint background checks. But what it did put in there was by December 15, 2016, the Public Service Commission could require fingerprint background checks. It doesn't mandate that they do. And they also gave an option. What they said is, even if the Maryland Public Service Commission requires this fingerprint check, companies, no particular company, but companies operating under this model can provide a plan to show that their background check is equivalent or better to fingerprint. And then the Public Service Commission would make the decision whether they agree with it or not. So what you're hearing now is part of that process. Metro's position on all of this is whatever the state law requires, that's what the company that would be subsidized, that would have trips subsidized by the Abilities Ride program, will be required to follow. If you're not legally operating in the state of Maryland, you cannot provide trips that will be subsidized by this program.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Next is Carol Tyson. 3 minutes.
Hi, everybody. I just want to follow up on Heidi's comments regarding Abilities Ride and make sure that everybody on the committee or subcommittee knows that there was the pre-proposal conference was held. Many companies were there and some advocates. And if you submitted questions, they said that they would respond in writing. So there's 24 pages of questions and answers that are up on the website. So if you're curious, it's very interesting to see what the companies were concerned about. I know some of them were my questions, but I just wanted to say, you know, I was disappointed to see that WMATA is passing up an opportunity to set higher standards across the board, and instead going ahead and just letting companies decide what those standards are going to be. And Heidi alluded already to the standard for training. And then also there's the issue that the committee had talked about around landline access is also not a requirement. They can require that you pay with a credit card and not cash. So they aren't required to accept cash. They can provide shared rides. That same stock answer was provided with questions around the ADA and whether companies needed to comply with the American with Disabilities Act and Title VI requirements. So the stock answer is that WMATA seeks to subsidize the vendor's business model, and then they'll hold the vendor to standards established by that model. So I just want people to be aware. So I'm not ending on a completely negative note. I am grateful for the wheelchair accessible vehicle requirement, though many, many companies asked, what does that mean? How many do we have to have? And there was an opportunity there to talk about equivalency and wait times that was passed up. Thank you for sticking to your data requirement. That's pretty huge, and I want to acknowledge that. So they're requiring data monthly, and one of the companies, we don't know who, asked, like, is there some way to get around that? And then Lamada said no, so that's great. I just wanted to point out that in those question and answers, it does say that when there's poor customer service, if there's a record of poor customer service and complaints, WMATA does have the authority to stop subsidizing that company. So I hope folks will make use of that if there are companies that aren't taking this seriously. So thank you.
Thank you. Next we have Ambrose Thorpe. Three minutes.
I have a question about you guys contracting to taxi services. I work with people with developmental disabilities, and from what I hear, when the van, if there's nobody to meet the person, they will, in turn of just dropping them off, to return them back to their to home. But with the taxi service, I'm hearing that they'll just drop them off. I just wanted to know, do you guys have like a standard form for van and when you send out a taxi? That is a universal code.
Well, our foremost concern is our passenger safety. So if we get to a destination, and unfortunately this does happen, where the destination is closed, and especially for the adult daycare centers, we do try to make sure that we take care of the passenger safety. So we try to reroute the passenger back home. With our taxi providers, they're also supposed to notify us if there's any change and call the operations control center so we can make adjustments. Or at the very least, call the emergency contacts and see what else we might be able to do.
We also have the ability as well to send out a road supervisor to that location to ascertain what is happening.
Okay, but I've had situations where they just dropped the person off because they were, a person that we support was dropped off 30 minutes early and just left there. It was an action taxi. I think that's what you guys have, and I hear what you're saying, but what are you doing to make sure that those steps are followed by contract companies?
Well, the contract companies, they all receive the same training as our dedicated van operators. So it sounds like, from what I'm hearing, that in this particular situation, we would be following up with the folks at Action to, you know, conduct an investigation to see what actually occurred and to make sure that we take action so that it does not occur going forward.
Mr. Chair,
yes.
May I ask a question of Sanders? So my understanding is the taxi operators have their own dispatch. So when we assign trips to them, we send over a batch of them the night before. They know that they're going to have X number of trips to provide. So they distribute them to their own drivers through their own dispatch. And then a taxi operator in the situation this gentleman is talking about gets to the destination, customer is let out, and there's no one to receive them, and the customer is not comfortable with this outcome. And I mean, the only question I just need to know at this point is, was this customer able to say to the driver, I don't want to be here because no one is there? Was there an obvious security issue?
He wasn't. He's not
Not verbal.
Okay,
all right, well, okay. So, not able to say something, the driver should recognize that without having to be told, number one, that is an unacceptable situation. Then the driver then would call back to the taxi dispatch operation and say, this has happened?
That is correct.
And then they are supposed to contact Metro Access Dispatch?
That is correct.
So if that chain of events doesn't happen, somebody's in trouble?
Correct.
As the...
Mr. Marshall? And just so you all know, this is why Mr. Marshall is approaching. Transdev manages our taxi operations, and he's our general manager for Metro Access to Transdev.
Thank you, sir, for saving me the extra work of having to introduce myself, and I'm going to say who I am. But I think you did a great job. The taxi providers. They are subcontracted by Transdev. When I came on board about a year ago, they had some issues with some of the operators not knowing exactly what they're supposed to do when it comes to door-to-door service and customer service. So we actually brought all of them back in-house and gave them additional training on customer service, on door-to-door, those things specific. But they also, as Ms. Alice from Mr. Christian can fill up the two, they get the same training that the van operators get. So yes, there are going to be times when an operator does the wrong thing, or maybe not purposely, but by mistake, maybe they forget. But we do, when we get that information, we do get with that operator to explain to them what they're supposed to do when they run into situations like that. But bottom line is that they are taught not to leave persons stranded. And they do call their dispatch, and we'll contact the OCC, we'll work through the issues, and if we need to, we'll send the road suit or we'll take the best back what they're supposed to do.
And Mr. Marshall, I thank you for that. I do want to ask those to Gray that, given this customer in particular was nonverbal, I'm assuming that we also have some ability with the notes in the file and customers' individual disabilities to not necessarily put them in that situation, given the vulnerability. Can you speak to that?
Absolutely. We're always supposed to be looking through the system to see what can we do to help the customer. In this case, if the customer is nonverbal, we are very worried about that. We do come up to centers even with our vans, where the center might not be open for maybe 10 or 15 minutes. So we have a couple of options that we can do. Is number one, complain. Number two, we can go up to the door and see if they're going to take anyone ahead of schedule or at that time. Or we will also communicate with the center as well and see what time we can open. And we'll see if there's any other customer strips that will be impacted by that. We will also see, too, if there's a center, a major center, we often have several vehicles that are going there, and we might transfer the passenger from one vehicle to the other, so we try to limit the number of vehicles that are waiting in line, but we'll ensure the safety of the passenger.
Thank you. And next on the list is Reginald King, 3 minutes.
Okay, we'll be back on the gentleman before me. With the taxis, I'm blind, and a couple of times I was going to a destination by myself. The taxi cab driver expected me to cross the street from where he didn't know. You said they're supposed to have to be under the same as Metro Access Clause, what, door to door, or they don't get out.
Sir, did you make a Metro Access reservation for that ride?
One time I know I didn't. I called the taxi, for the $5 trip. And the second time, Metro Access made it.
If it is a Metro Access trip, we're supposed to be door to door, which means you don't cross the street. If you use a different service, they can be set up differently. But, between what you've said, sir, and the previous customer, when these things happen, we really need to know very specifically, because we can put notes in the file and prevent this sort of thing from happening again. But there are differences between Transport TC's setup and what we have on Metro Access. So that, in other words, that $5 DC program you're talking about runs a little differently. So, you know, it's just important if it happens again, you know, if you're talking about Metro Access, please let us know. That's right. The little voice near you is your guardian angel. That's how you
see it. I'm going to see it afterwards.
Yeah, she's going to help you out with Transport DC. She's on the advisory committee for Transport DC, and she's doing double duty this evening.
Thank you. Next person on the list is Joanne. If I'm saying it right, Joanne. Thank you.
And I have several questions because the last time I was here, I was totally disrespected, and then I was on the Metro Access van. And then my brother passed away, and I was going into Virginia, and I got kicked off the van. I came in here, and I talked about the issues that I should have a wheelchair with a Merlin eyes. I should have one of the walkers, but this is what I have. I have been put in danger. And I seen Carolyn Bellamy over here that was on the Merlin buses, and she thought she had the authority to put me off the bus with this. She said, when I get on the bus, oh, you have to get that thing off the bus. I was totally disrespected by them and the drivers, Metro and Ryderman, because of this, I can go to the front and everybody else will be able to get on the bus, and I'm supposed to wait until everybody gets off. Then when I boarded, and this just happened over the weekend, when I was introduced to this woman with her grandson, and I got the pictures, and I had to call the police because it was a threat. And also she stated she was on the advisory panel. She is going to go into court because she doesn't know me. I have every right to get on the buses, whether it's the Merlin buses or the Metro buses, pulling out the ramp and getting on there safely on them, and not be threatened by any person in a wheelchair with their person that's riding with them. That's one issue. The other issue is for Mr. John Gray. I have been with Metro Access almost maybe 8 years or so, and had a complaint when my daughter was on the van. She no longer wanted to get on the van because it was in Montgomery County, and they embarrassed her. And then when it came to recertification, they kicked me off. And then every recertification again, they're telling me I never had the blue and white card. So coming back to this year, when I had the for 1 year, it was so humiliating by the person, and one of them here is that man there, that he's tan, he's blind, and then the one that walked up that says he has to have crutches, he was one that makes determinations on appeal, and then the one who wrote a letter wants my doctor, two doctors, a neurologist and a medical doctor, let them know what was going on. And so my issues was I was assaulted on one of the buses. I sell Mary Kay. My product one time was taken off the bus and
we
put
have staff here that can assist with you.
And so the other issue, Mr.
Joanne.
John, you take my time.
Yes, 3 minutes. Thank you. Staff will see you about your concerns.
Joanne, You're the chairman? The stripes get red and the white stripes. Are you the chairman?
You're the chairman.
Yes.
Okay, what's your name?
My name's Mr. Simmelfort.
Mr.
Simmelfort, and
Mr.
Simmelfort, and customer said 3 minutes. Yes, staff will. All right, thank you. We must move on. Thank you. Staff? Who wants to?
I think the first couple of questions were addressed towards me. I believe from what I'm hearing, well, first off, let me apologize. If your daughter was embarrassed, we apologize for that. I believe your other questions might be for eligibility. Am I correct in that?
Right, we do see you for eligibility.
We're going to talk to the evangelist after the meeting. We're going to move on.
Thank you. All right. Next we have new business. Is there any new business items from the 8 subcommittee members that you want to bring forth? Ms. Ross, do you have any new business to discuss?
Well, discuss what I was going to discuss about the fingerprinting. But I want to know Metro Access or the contractors, are they still fingerprinting the drivers or they're no longer doing that?
Hello? Ms. Rush, I can answer that. No, they, we are using a commercial background check process at this time.
Any other new business concerns?
I think it's important. You know, I realize that there's not really a lot I can say about this, but I will just share with you that fingerprint checks through the FBI do require special access and special authority to use. It's not commonly used by most companies for employment criminal history checks because the rights of the person who is being searched are protected, and there's certain information that is meant for law enforcement purposes as opposed to employment purposes, and that's why most companies use a commercially available background check service. There's been a lot of discussion about this. I will just tell you that as a staff person, you know, I share your concern that we want the very best process for all of the services for all riders, people with disabilities especially, but also our regular customers who use bus and rail services, that they are, that they're being transported by people who understand that their jobs include the public trust. But I can also tell you that it's been years and years and years that most public transit systems have used commercially available background check services, and they work just fine. One of the things I'm also going to tell you that may come as a bit of a surprise, because it was a surprise to me, is that in the instances where we have had incidents on Metro Access or other paratransit services that I've managed, every single time that something has gone wrong, we go to the criminal history and we don't find anything. So even if you do a background check on someone and they come up clear, that does not mean that they are guaranteed not to have misconduct in the future, because there's always a first time. And sometimes it happens on services like paratransit, where the vehicle goes to different places all the time. And that's one of the reasons why, to be honest with you, the criminal history check only provides a certain amount of information about candidates. The rest of it is a combination of the employers, being very mindful of who they hire, interacting with them, And Metro and our contractors using good surveillance systems to keep track of where the vehicles are. And customers and other people in the community speaking up whenever they see anything that doesn't look right. It's just kind of like in the rail system when you hear people say, you know, if you see something, say something. You know, that applies to paratransit as well. So when we're talking about the security of our customers, we're all involved in that in one way or another. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. There are no other, I guess, new business items. I'd like to make a motion to adjourn.
Yes, I make a motion.
All those in favor, please do so by saying aye.
Aye.
Nays. Be careful. To adjourn.
Happy time. Put it in.
Okay, I'm gonna stop y'all tape.